Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towns of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. I am looking forward to get back up to Hampstead on Thursday with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have the Back to the Future scratch-offs. This segment's going to be a little bit of Back to the Future, Back to the Past, and hopefully ahead to out of last place at some point as the Orioles are out on the West Coast. We're going to be at Fadley's next Friday when the West Coast team from Anaheim via Los Angeles and Southern California makes their way to Camden Yards. Luke will be with me next Friday at Fadley's. We're doing Reader's Crab House up in Reisterstown. Looking forward to that. Also confirmed 1623 Brewery out in Eldersburg the day after the All-Star game in July. So just doing a whole bunch of things this summer. Looking forward to getting out. We're having a lot of business people, politicians, baseball people, football people, rock and roll people. My favorite people are rock and roll people. Everybody knows that. This guy is a rock and roll person. He wears many hats, and he's wearing one right now. He also wears many guitars. He is a guitarist in two tribute bands, one an AC/DC band called Shoot to Thrill, also in a Scorpions band, throwing that V-neck around and all Germaned up, and Schenkering is what he's doing in a Scorpions tribute band. But when he's not doing that, he's covering the business of sports. I got to know him as Bizball Mari. He is in Portland, Oregon, never Maine. Although they have delicious wild Maine blueberries this time of year in Maine. He's in Portland, Oregon, where the Orioles are going to be in Seattle this weekend. I think Mari Brown considers the Seattle Mariners his home team, even though I see you go up there on opening day and it's like going from here to New York. I have made that trek right before when I left you, I think at the bus station there, at the Mega Bus in Portland. I was going up to Seattle and Vancouver and doing the
You
whole.
too, right?
Yeah, I mean, what a beautiful part of the world you live in, and you're a baseball nerd in Portland, and the only way you can like get at the major league thing is to go to Seattle when we're not sending Adley Rutschman your way, right?
Yeah, hey Adley, man. We still love him here. So, yeah, it interesting time for the Orioles. It's an interesting time.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm here, and you know my feet are on the ground, and you know where I was with Angelos and Free the Bird. I took a phone call from a listener, Anna. I would call her Miss Anna, but that would piss her off because she's not that old. I hope she's getting better. She's a listener of mine, and her daughter and I have been friends. She tended bar at my old Ravens events when I would bring Elodie Nada, when Rex Ryan would come out and not eat vegetables. This is 20 years ago. She called me. She said, "I'm really worried about you, man. I heard you in the air. You sounded so despondent and down about the Orioles." And I'm like, I kind of am in a way, like I'm reaching to some of you, and just to let you know that, like, you know, for a lifeline, I said to John Eisenberg, I'm like, I've waited all of these years for the new thing, the next thing, and this guy right now, thumbs down on all of it, just all of it. Just, you know, they fire their manager on Saturday and they can't get behind it, they can't get in front of it. He's giving his own bobblehead out. I mean, it's just really. And they're in last place. It's just really problematic. And what's really problematic, Mari, is that they're out on the West Coast this week and they're playing in the middle of the night out in your part of the world. This is where, when it's a last place team, you just find something else to do. You know, you go to bed. You know, you get out of the soap opera a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I would okay, so they swept. They have a their first sweep of the season, right? They take three games, although it's the White Sox, right? So you can't really put too much weight behind that. You know, they've been hit with a bunch of injuries. Okay, so they're gonna get Cowser back. We're trying to debate whether Charlie Morton is really the Charlie Morton that we remember, but my expectation as we roll into the trade deadline is that they will be heavy sellers. I just think they're going to try and wipe this season clean. They're just going to write it off at this point. It's always when in doubt, fire the manager, right? I mean, that's the cliche.
Well, they've already done that check.
The issue, I know they're talking about bringing John Mabry in because they're down two coaches. That's not going to solve the problem. The problem is more systemic than that, and I think that they're going to try and maybe they've got to retool a little bit. It's interesting about this, Nestor, because they're playing Seattle, right? And I think that Seattle actually would become a very good partner at the trade deadline for them. Seattle's loaded with a bunch of prospects. They are in a very good position after last year, right? The Mariners were 10 games up in mid-season and then went into a complete collapse. And
Well, they couldn't hit the ball, kind of reminiscent of where the Orioles are. Like, I mean, they weren't getting anyone on base, right? I mean, like for weeks at a time, the Orioles are getting guys on base and they're going 114 for runners in scoring position and somehow still winning 3-2. You know, it's crazy.
So Seattle's problem really was a coach's issue. They brought Edgar Martinez back, and they got their hitting turned around. They led the league last year in strikeouts. That is not the case this year. Their problems now are around pitching, which has been dinged up pretty bad. So the Orioles are going to face George Kirby today, who is got quite a bit of rust. Has looked not exactly his pre-injury form since coming back. So you go, well, that's a bonus for the Orioles. You know, maybe they get that. They face Emerson Hancock tomorrow before they get to Brian Wu, which is not good if you're an Orioles fan. So it's just weird. I mean, you're going to go look at the A's right after this, which for a while there, everybody was going, oh, the A's. Now they're looking pretty good, right? They're going to be 500, which is like pretty good at 500, right? But they look like the A's that I think most people expect right now. So if you're an Orioles fan, right, you go, oh, you know, they've got an opportunity here at least a little bit. The bad news is the Mariners are a very good team. I don't know whether they're going to win the AL West, but they're a very good team. Cal Raleigh has been doing some historic stuff at the catcher position at the plate. And their pitching, if they can get it sorted out, will put them in a good spot. So, and they're fighting, right? The Mariners are fighting for first. They got a half game lead over the Astros right now. So, back to the Orioles. I mean, it was never the manager at issue here. It's a GM ownership thing, and I can't imagine, or I hope that they go, well, this year sucks. Just write this year off and reload, and somehow next year is going to be better. Like the Yankees are going to get any worse. I just don't see it right now.
Mari Brown is our guest. He's out in Portland, Oregon. He covers the business of baseball as well as auto racing, a whole bunch of different things out at Forbes. And you can follow him at Bizball Mari as well. One of the voices sits down with a lot of leadership as well and talking about media and money and all of that, the important stuff, all stemming from trying to steal a baseball team into Portland many years ago. And now, you know, the A's and the Rays, and you know, these teams are just floating around. And you know, I was joking with Barry Trotz. I had him on this week. I said, I saw Utah up, and I'm like, who the hell's Utah in the NHL? You know what I mean? Oklahoma City. Who would have thought of such a thing, especially during a Seattle week here in the NBA Finals? But you know, these teams move, and this Oakland thing that we're going to see in the weekend. It's sort of indicative of how messed up baseball is right now, and how, you know, even in Seattle, like your Seattle guy, they've never won, right? So, like, trying to build tradition, always working from behind. They had Ichiro, they had Randy Johnson, they had Ganger. You know, they've had these legendary things happen, but there's nothing as legendary as winning. And I feel sort of sorry for Mariners fans. You know, whenever I've been out there, I'm like, you know, it's been good at various points, but you'd like to think at some point there could be a parade there. And the Seahawks kind of brought it home. And before that, the Sonics, before they left, a lot of glory era. It's a great kind of sports area, but the Mariners sort of lag behind always, like the little engine that can't in some way.
Yeah, I would say, Nestor, I think this is an issue that for your listeners out on the East Coast is hard to comprehend. West Coast sports fans are built a little bit different. And it's just not, it doesn't have the history that you have on the East Coast, right? And you don't get Major League Baseball out here until 57, right, with the Giants and the Dodgers. And so you really have more of a laid back atmosphere with it, right? The Seattle situation in terms of T-Mobile Park, it's beautiful. I mean, you go to the ballpark, you look out at the city, you climb up to the back of the ballpark and look out on Puget Sound. It's amazing.
That deck in left field's really it, you know,
Yeah.
it's a top 10 thing in baseball. I went to every ballpark. Like, thing you should do, you know, if you pick the right night in Seattle and go out to left field during sunset, it's something, man.
Yeah, it's so it I joked that for the longest time they had what they called, when it was Safeco Field, it was Club Safeco. You know, they opened up the deck, you get a bunch of 20 and 30 somethings out there drinking, you know, expensive beers, sitting there trying to figure out, you know, what's going on in their life. They turn around and it's like, oh, now there's a baseball game going on. It's just not as hyper competitive, and I think that that is a bad thing. I mean, they're an expansion team, you know. Granted, it's been a long time
50
now.
years, man, you
Yeah,
know,
I
like
know.
literally.
But you just don't get the vibe like you do with East Coast teams. And so, or even as I would even say the Royals, certainly, you know, the Cardinals, the teams that have been around and have history, you don't have that. Now, that said, I think the fan base has just about had enough. Attendance is down again this season for good reason after
See, I
last
mean, these are
season.
things I don't know because I'm not up late every night. You know,
Right.
like attendance being down and stuff. This is every time we get together, and dude, it's been almost a decade since we went gallivanting around
Yeah.
Portland. You know what I mean? Like, and I remember bleeding your ears that night. And you remember me as the Free the Birds guy and whatever. And I'm like, this is, you know, people can make excuses for baseball, but, you know, like I've been checking the temperature here every minute of every day for 35 years. And the woman running the Orioles, Katie Griggs, came from Seattle and, you know, has came here on a white horse, like she's going to save everything. And I'm like, oh my God, you now have a last place team that you're mired with in a place that has all sorts of economic challenges, just in a general sense, and real trust problems in the community. I mean, I can't begin to tell you, when you have an owner like Angelos in a place like this, there's a broken trust part of taking your credit card that's different than I think the Mariners deal with. The Mariners deal with, they just haven't won. I don't think it's been like a broken bond or try. I mean, I always feel like the Mariners have been trying to win, trying to be cool. They've always had cool uniforms. They've always had great players. There's always been a reason to go King Felix. I mean, like, you know, I mean, Edgar Martinez, I can't think of him. I didn't even mention him as the Mount Rushmore of the franchise, and he certainly is. But like, you know, they've had a nice thing there, and they've had moments, but they've never had the moment.
No, and that is the, I think the issue is that they're just good enough to break your heart every single season. And so what is this, right? You talk about the community trust, right? So it becomes difficult to make an emotional investment when year after year, if you're hanging around the bottom of the standings, right? And the Mariners haven't had that, right? They tend to hang around the middle. They're like the most middling team in that regard. And they have stars, right? But they just never can seem to piece it all together. And in some ways, I don't know whether that's a feature or a bug. In that sense, their payroll hangs around the middle. That's, you know, it never drops down toward the bottom. It never reaches toward the top. They act and move like a mid-market. You know, and
When's the
so,
last time they spent money on a player? Didn't they get one of the Mets or Yankees guys a number 15 years ago? Didn't they sign?
well, I mean, they've had a number of players that they brought in. I mean, it's
They took
just
Nelson Cruz from us, right? I mean, they
right.
signed
So
it,
there was
right?
obviously Nelson Cruz was one of them. They've had a bunch of other ones that have just kind of filtered through and just not worked. You tend to get guys like more like Justin Turner, right? Who at is more at the tail end of their career.
Well,
So, and
it's like
this
the
was a
Tyler
problem with
O'Neill signing here was sort of like, you know, not inspiring, right? Yeah.
that's and that's, you know, that's the history of the Orioles for the longest time, right? If we go back a decade or more, they tended to go and spend. So I used to spend an awful lot of time looking at how teams spent from effectivity and efficiency. Right. So the Rays would be the most efficient and effective, right? They spend very little, they perform, they overperform for what they pay. The Yankees, of course, overpay, so they're ineffective, but For the most part, right, they're effective in the standings. The Orioles, for the longest time, were both ineffective and just inefficient. They'd overpay and have terrible results. So I think what's happening with the Orioles is they're trying to get out of that model, right? And granted, you've got a new owner in there that's not exactly making the best impression out of the gate. So what are they going to do about that? Do you sit? I do. I think that you go much like the Mets did in many ways, right? You kind of blow it up, halfway through the season. Obviously, they're not spending in the way that you've seen Cohen do with the Mets, right? I mean, obviously, nobody's going to be able to do that, with the few exceptions, the Dodgers maybe. So the Orioles are in a difficult spot, right? I mean, you talk about that trust issue. So cash flow, how things are going, you need to build some good will towards your fan base to get them to come back and consistently invest. I always talk about this, Nestor, that roller coastering can sometimes be the worst, right? Like, you're good and you're bad. This is what the Marlins did for the longest time. And I said, it's like a roller coaster. You get jerked around. At the end of the day, you get off the ride, you just feel nauseous. It's really hard for fans to be invested. Well, this is the worst situation. You've been historically bad for a long run. You have your history 20 years ago, right? That's the last time when Angelos obviously rode in on the
That was
coattails.
30 years ago now.
30. God, Nestor, don't do that to me.
Dude.
Right.
Dude.
But I mean, you know what I'm saying? 30 years ago, right? So the idea of riding on the coattails of what you had and then just consistently just living off the ballpark. And you just can't do that for an extended period of time. You start to erode your fan base. So they need to do something. And I mean, speaking to what's going to go on right now, I think there's going to be a false sense here. Whether they come out of this series with the Mariners on the good side of things, you can't use a three-game sweep of the White Sox as your barometer.
Well, once
You
you're
can't.
18 games under 500, you are what you are. You know, I
Yeah,
mean,
you
a
are.
dozen
That's.
under, nine under 50, it doesn't matter. I mean, trying to dig out, wake me if they're flawless on the West Coast, wake me. But like, they don't have pitching for that. Certainly, the hitting has been suspect. But just down the line for how first round draft picks have ascended to the point where they can get to the big leagues. And then fail miserably. Coby Mayo, Heston Kjerstad down the line. And then they deal out Stowers and he winds up hitting the ball in Miami. And your guy Rutschman really sits at the center of whatever this era of Oriole baseball is going to be, because it feels like Gunnar Henderson's going to be at least a nice player. I don't know that he's Mickey Mantle. He looked that way last year. I think Westberg might be the best of all of them if he can get in the lineup and be healthy. Couser comes back. He strikes out a lot. It just doesn't profile like that. And Jackson Holliday profiles as, hey, the wow kind of thing. Rutschman was supposed to be the wow. He was a wo you know for a while, and it's been a year, man, and like,
Yeah.
wow, and you're Portland, and you know him as a kid coming up, and like all that. I there was talk like give him $300 million, Mr. Rubenstein. Now it's like, where's Bisaccia? And that's not good, and it's not. Brian Billick would always say the old coach line was, "Your potential is going to get me fired." It already got it got Hyde fired. And Elias, and I know we're at a point now with Elias where is he still going to be the grocery shopper when this is done? You can't fire him now because of the draft in 3 4 weeks, right? July 13th is a draft at this point. It's a precarious ownership place for Rubenstein, who is a baseball neophyte, doesn't know much about the sport, doesn't know anything, certainly isn't evaluating talent, but then has to evaluate who's going to evaluate the talent. And now I'm like, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, here we go again. That's sort of like a Dolly Parton song, right?
Yeah, and all that suffering is really true, Nestor. It's they're not in the position that I often see with the Blue Jays, which is this tweener state. There's certainly the idea that there are some core key pieces, right? Every club has some jewels that either Are there in their entirety, or as you mentioned, Holiday, like, and Rushman, like, where is it? Where does it start to come together? Whether it's a matter of teams being able to figure out that they could go after guys like that because the rest of the lineup is just so inconsistent that they'll pick and choose where to go after. So, hey, if you're going to beat me, I don't have anybody behind you in the lineup that's going to go ahead and basically do the damage, which you see with obviously good rosters. The Orioles don't have that.
Well,
So,
Santander being taken out was a bit of a heart transplant, kind of like when we lost Nelson Cruz. By the way, the guy was Robinson Cano was the big money guy on the Mariners side
yeah.
that it came to me saying, that's the last time. It was 2014. And that's $240 million. It was, one of those deals. The Orioles didn't sign Corbin Burns because they kind of could. He just didn't want to be here, right? But like when you piece this thing together, if Gunnar Henderson was going to be a 30 home run, 300 hitter, 115 RBI guy. Rutschman was going to be a 285 catcher with 25 home run, 100 RBI power. And, you go down that list of what's Westberg's going to be a 280 hitter with 22 home runs and 90 RBIs. Like, you just put those numbers in. Grayson Rodriguez going to give you 180 innings. He was going to make 32 starts. He was going to be your 20 game winner. Like, no. None of that's happened. And Rutschman's not even a major league player. He's a 200 hitter. He's a Mendoza. Like it's really problematic all the way. And O'Hearn's been great. You know what I mean? And they've been a piece of this and a piece of that. The Sugano's been okay. But like all of their dreams and goals of what they've sold the fan base after winning 101 games 2 years ago, and really what they sold the owner who doesn't know his ass from his elbow, that this was going to be put them out on the field, they're going to win 90, 95 games, they're going to be fine. Whew. Like, and it's not quickly fixable to your point. It's going to take surgery, not just, a quick little, this isn't a little root canal here.
No, and that's why I think that O'Hearn is the main piece that winds up going away. I think the lesson for this season is for everything that you mentioned, Nestor, it's just there's a bunch of open question marks. It's not like you can go and say, well, there's just a little bit here or a little bit there that we can go ahead and we can tweak to go ahead and make this work. It's just
The pitching's too far away, Mari.
That's
You
the
know, the
biggest thing.
pitching's too. The hitting, I'll buy into. They'll figure it out, and Cash will figure it out, and Westberg will be back, and they'll kumbaya, and all these young guys. Because you got to play them. Mayo's going to hit 35 home runs. Sure, he is. He's Dave Kingman. But he almost got him in all in a fight on Saturday. Like, I like all of these kids that are frustrated now because they're in last place, playing in the middle of the night for nobody in Sacramento, whatever, right? And now they're playing for their numbers. Holiday feels like he got some game in him. Westberg to me has always felt like he's like a BJ Surhoff sort of like he's going to play 15 years in the big leagues and hit 265 every year and be a guy you want on your team. You know what I mean? He's a Kevin Millar. He's going to Kevin Millar. He's going to be that kind of guy for you. But I look at the rest of this and say the pitching, they don't draft it. They just don't draft pitchers, right? See, they don't. So then they have to trade and or sign or have money, and they certainly didn't have any money before Moneybag showed up a year and a half ago. Like he built this thing praying that Rubinstein would come along. And now Rubinstein gave him some money in the offseason and said, you spent $5 million on Kyle Gibson and he like you gave him away. Now he's gonna go to Tampa and come back and haunt you. And they gave $17 million to Charlie Morton. Like they just spent a lot of money in 1 year. The good news, nothing on the payroll next year beyond the Tyler O'Neill mistake, but I'm trying to figure out one thing Elias has done from a trade perspective. It feels to me like really good scout architect of 19-year-old kids with upside, with bats, with bats, with hitting the ball, with five tool, all shortstops, draft shortstops, and we'll turn them into things. But beyond that, when it comes to tactically, Jack Flaherty at the deadline, you have Fuji, a couple, I mean, just really a lot of swings and misses here.
Yeah, the core thing is, right, the biggest issue with the Orioles was is that you're relying on what you had in that 100 win, right? When things were going great, right? And so you sit there, and because the draft pool is not solid and not very robust, the ability to go ahead and develop, find your good ones, out of the fluff, there's always players where you go, oh, that's the next coming, right? That's the one. And then of course they get in there and you find out that that's not the case. The Orioles aren't unique in that sense. But again, to the team that I know pretty well and that the Orioles are about to play, the Mariners turned around their development and their drafting. And that took a couple, 2 or 3 years. And they really leaned into that. And what they've done, of course, is that they've wrapped up players. I never thought in a million years Cal Raleigh would get wrapped up. I just the guy could have made an absolute killing in free agency. I mean, he's really something special, mostly from the left side of the plate, but he's a switch hitter and he calls a great game. He's outstanding, right? Julio Rodriguez. Certainly there's another player, right, that, while we haven't seen it completely top out in terms of mega superstar, they see that. And I haven't seen the Orioles really going that route. Like drafting well, doing your player development, and then augmenting with free agency. I mean, if you're just going to go out there and try to quickly plug holes through free agency to try and right a problem, it's just when you see the wheels fall off so fast, Nestor, I mean, that's where you start to go, it's not the manager. And so, okay. All right. I think that what you're going to see is, I don't think your GM is going to get fired. I do think that they're going to blow it up, or they're going to have to bring in some prospects. And so again, I
Well, I
hate to
mean,
be a fan.
Mountcastle has no value. I don't know about their guys in the bullpen having real value to deal, Batista and different things, like whether that really will be that attractive to bring you things you want more than Batista on your team next year. Eflin, sure. But again, Mari, this time last year, Bradish. Healthy coming back, right? Wasn't going to have Tommy John. Corbin Burns on fire. Grayson Rodriguez emerging as the next Jim Palmer, not Storm Davis, right? And the notion that they would go out into the market and get a Crochet and start to load up and do what the Astros did when the Verlander thing came along, or what the Nationals did when the Scherzer thing came along, just sort of like, go get some dudes. Go make a deal and go make a couple of deals. And instead, the Trevor Rogers thing, and Burns goes out the side door. Rodriguez gets hurt. Bradish is gone. Wells is gone. Just it's been an astonishing turn, man. I mean, I've been watching Oriole baseball here, been on the air 35 years, talking about it every day. All the awfulness, all the Angelo's dark ages and bad periods and all of that. There was so much hope built here with ownership. Cal's behind home plate, the owner's doing the Papal wave and all of the bougie that they were selling. But the young stars and hitting, that's something that I don't, Luke and I talk about it every day. The fact that Rutschman's gone from, Johnny Bench to, Mendoza is just the guys that are hurt and the pitchers, that's bad enough for the whole operation. But just having ascending players flop, that was not on the dance card here. All the rest of this is sort of you can feel, but the guys that aren't making it, that have to make it, if you built it that way, because you built it that way to deal them off to get the Trevor Rogers pitchers and dealt off Ortiz to get to rent Burns for 6 months and can't get at the post. It's really it's been deflating for a fan base that was already very, very traumatized by the Angelos era.
Yeah, and that where's your margin of error? There is none, right? You're dealing with a situation to where the fan base is so battered and has been battered for so long, and you have all this hope built up. It's not the same. Certainly the Mets dealt with this, right? You saw this for the longest time. Cohen comes in, spends incredibly. It went completely south, so that would be deflating. But this is nothing like what we've seen, I think, in Baltimore. To the guys that you mentioned, Rutschman, obviously, Holiday. I do wonder again. Is this the trajectory, because it fell off so seemingly fast, or is it that the lineup around them? I want to come back to that again. Like, your ability to go after them, right, is a lot easier when the rest of the lineup is so paper thin. But
Santander protected a lot of things in the middle of this thing that I don't think people felt. And certainly, Westbrook's a hell of a player and hasn't swung the bat, right? I mean, Kowser, for whatever he is, it is really weak in the team to have him not be able to play and O'Neal not be able to play and Kerstad to be a thumbs down and Mountcastle's got four home runs in a year.
That's horrific. That's horrific.
I mean, like, and Rutschman's at 200. So, and as a unit, as whomever they put in, any of these other Dylan Carlson's, pick any of the names of the guys that they never, Urias, Mateo, these
Right.
guys getting at bats that they never factored into any of these things because they weren't front of class, including Coby Mayo, including Kerstad to some degree, that the notion that Gunnar Henderson wouldn't be available the first month, none of the Holiday's been really good. O'Hearn's been really good. The rest of it's been a bag of donuts, man. Like it's really, and that's how they're last place. That's the runners in scoring position thing's been a problem. Strikeouts been a problem. They can't hit left-handers at all in any way. And it's June. And that's how you amass, playing 360 ball.
Yeah, and so let's go back to where we are coming up with the trade deadline. They have to find some pieces. You can't do it all through free agency. First of all, I don't know whether this is the issue with what has hung over the franchise for so long, or just the fact that you just can't buy yourself out of a hole that big. I just don't think you can do it that way. It does take supplementing to do it right. So I do think that you're going to see some trade stuff. And I do think, again, I mean, if they saddle up with Seattle, and look, man, Jerry DePoto's Trader Jerry, man, they could get some solid pieces, largely through pitching. I mean, the Mariners are loaded with pitching prospects. So if you say O'Hearn is kind of the key guy that you could use as a trade piece, maybe that's how they're going to go about this thing. Can you turn it around in a
I mean, it
scheme?
really is amazing because you're the first one on my airwaves to talk about O'Hearn being like
He just strikes me as the.
getting something back for him that would be big at the deadline because he would bring a big bat into a lineup. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm just saying 6 weeks ago he was a platoon player. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And a failed first round draft pick that you kind of hope just hit 280 and hit the ball when you ask him to against certain pitchers. I to think that you're going to get anything appreciable for Sugano for I mean I go down the list of all of this. I mean I Holiday, you're not dealing him.
No.
Rutschman, I mean, you're not I, you're not
No.
dealing the stock. You're not dealing any of Westbrook's got to be
Henderson, no.
untouchable. Henderson's untouchable. I mean, they have the guys that other teams might want and say, I can fix him. I can make Cowser strike out less, whatever it might be. They're not going to give any commensurate value back. And this franchise went from 8 weeks ago being a 90-win team in Vegas, thinking that they were a pitcher away and a bullpen piece away from being a serious World Series contender to, oh my God, who's going to be their opening day starter next year when Eflin's gone and Rodriguez and question mark and question mark and question mark and Rutschman question mark and There's a lot of baseball to be played this summer, but when you play it from last place in the middle of the night in Seattle and Sacramento, it's a whole different mojo, man. And if hats off to this Holiday kid for like just saying, I'm a gamer, dude. I'm going to the Hall of Fame. Give me the ball. Let's go. And I see that in him. And I thought I saw that in Rutschman, but they were winning and winning. Everybody's a hell of a winner. But man, when these guys lose 2 out of 3 nights, they're hiding in the locker room. Nobody can be found. It's real, general manager fired the manager, Mari, on Preakness Saturday morning in a home game and hid on Saturday, hid on Sunday, and emerged on Tuesday in Milwaukee to answer questions from a couple of reporters in the dugout. That's leadership.
That's PR 101. When in doubt, fire the manager. That is,
And hide. No, not Brandon Hyde. Hide. Hide. Yeah.
So let's get back to O'Hearn for a second, what you're talking about, right? There are teams out there where you go, well, what, I'm not gonna, I can't see getting any appreciative value out of a guy like that. And there are clubs out there that kind of operate on the fringes of not going after star player. Seattle again really fits this bill. They got problems at first base. Telez has not really worked out at first. That was kind of a, that was a fill a hole kind of thing. So there are clubs out there in the middle. I think the problem with the Orioles, right, and this reminds me again of the team that I know well in Seattle, is that you operate from, at least in the here and now, of let's operate from the idea that there will be regression from others. Okay, so right now, the Blue Jays, I think, are sitting in second, probably have no right being there right now. They're operating from a negative run differential, and you go, oh, well, there's baseball left. They're going to drop, and things go our way, and players come off the injury list, and we're going to get this guy's bat turned around, and it's, we're not even halfway there, and we can come out of the cellar. Okay, if you finish third, that's not what you would be expecting with the Baltimore Orioles. You're hoping for the Baltimore Orioles to be challenging the Yankees and certainly the Rays, and they're not. I mean, it's
Well, I'm
just.
not under any. I watch them play every night. I'm not under any thought that they can go 19-8 this month or something.
No,
Like I
no
just
way.
I they don't have the kind of pitching to do that. Now they
No.
do have the kind of hitting that we thought when the lineup gets back, get Couser back, get Westberg back, Mayo, Kerstad, whoever these guys are, whoever's getting the O'Neill, he's got paid a lot of money to hit 30 home runs this year. Let's see. Where are the next 20 coming from, and where are these at bats? That there should be some nights they could score 7, 8, or 9 runs and offset whatever bad pitching they would get. The pitching's gotten a little bit more focused, a little better, but the hitting, man, and the situational hitting has just been it's been uncanny on nights where you look up and they've got 12 hits and 3 runs,
Yeah,
whether they're
well,
winning or losing. It's been uncanny.
yeah, this is where I don't know if John Mayberry is the answer to getting the hitting turned around, but it can happen. Again, let's go back to Seattle because, again, that's a team I know well, and you're about ready to see them. They were horrible last year, Nestor. I mean, they just struck out so much, stranding runners in scoring position. They were just terrible at it. And they did. They brought Edgar Martinez back. And once they brought him back, I mean, there was a real difference. And statistically, and you could see it visibly, they were just a lot better at the plate. So it can happen. Is John Mayberry the answer to these hitting problems? I don't know. But they're down staff right now. It's not good to be down staff. I don't know if it takes care of this problem in its entirety. I don't see that. I don't right
I think
now.
John Mabry would come in and say they got good ball players here. We got good hitters here. Let's get them. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah,
everybody
they
loved all
could.
that. You love this game. I had you on in February. Oh my God, all those young talent. Okay, great. It's June. They're still here. Let's get them
Right.
healthy and get them. Mari Brown is here. He is with Forbes. He covers the business of baseball. He is out in Portland, Oregon. Covers the Mariners, which is why I brought him on this week. Let's get. No more baseball. I'm done with baseball. I had an occasion at Christmas time to go to lunch with friends and other friends. My wife had work friends and we had personal friends and turned it into sort of, we were down at Amici's, my favorite place in Baltimore. If you ever come to Baltimore, I'm thinking Amici's, get you a Pane Rotondo. And we're having like a holiday conversation. Our friend's daughter was in town conducting this orchestra. And we got talking about my goofy belt buckles, my rock and roll belt buckles. And the guy said to me, what, tell me about this. And I'm like, yeah, there's a couple of belt buckles really hard to get. There's a Blues Brothers belt buckle. There's a UFO belt buckle that's hard. And I just like sort of threw that out. And I know what a UFO fan you are, and you're in a Scorpions cover band. We're going to get to the AC/DC thing in a minute. But my wife went to lunch with this guy again. He's got a business and it's a thing and whatever. And he got me a gift. And she brought it home for me in a bag and gave it to me. And when I opened it, it was the UFO belt buckle. I got this thing and I'm like, it was maybe the nicest gift anybody's ever given me. It's a really rare, weird, hard thing to get. And I now own it. So I wanted to show it to you because like you've got a Schenker thing. I've interviewed Schenker, but I don't know if I like your AC/DC cover band better or your Scorpions. I mean, you're in two different awesome bands using this amazing guitar skill set you have to channel Malcolm Young.
Yeah, so Malcolm Young, right, is a, I think, super underrated. I mean, as rhythm players go, he's probably the best ever in my mind. And I think the critics would kind of say the same thing, but that's it. And it's great to do that. But I've been a lead player my whole career. So that kind of took a back seat for a long time. And I wanted to dig that back out. Now, granted, I'm not doing all the Matias stuff, but I'm doing some. I'm doing more, and it's just more technical. The Scorpion stuff is, and again, the stuff on the Love Drive album that we do, I get to, that's Michael Schenker with the band after, Lonesome Crow, and so yeah, I get to do that. And there's been talk, Nestor, if we can find a doggone singer, of doing myself, the other guitar player, a guy named Mick Caldwell that plays in Black and Blue. If remember the 80s band out of that, he's in a bunch of stuff. We've talked about doing a UFO Michael Schenker thing. And yeah, that would be awesome. Now I'd be doing the Paul Raymond thing. I'd be doing keyboards and guitar, but that UFO stuff, look, you know how this works. And this happens for anybody that goes to concerts. Your first concert really affects you in a big way. And UFO was the first band of the first concert that I went to. It was Dan the Green in Oakland when Charlie Finley owned it. It was Frampton, Fleetwood Mac right after Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks joined, Gary Wright, and UFO
There's a
on the
lot
No
of
Heavy.
Fleetwood Mac footage from that show, correct?
It was insane. This was the Frampton
Yeah.
Comes Alive tour. UFO was on the No Heavy Petting album, which is one of my favorite albums of all time. So that always stuck with me. I mean, it just really did. So UFO, super underrated. They just never got good distribution. They should have been bigger than they were. And then Michael Schenker is kind of, emotionally was kind of all over the place, like disappear. And, but the truth about that band is while the stuff post Michael Schenker is, I love it. No Place to Run is getting remastered and is a great album. The album that Schenker did with them in the 90s, Walk on Water, is fantastic. So it really shows that he, that's like peak UFO stuff.
Well, Murray Brown is a not UFO, the TV show or any of that, or even movies, the band UFO, and he's in a Scorpions cover band. Love Drive is the name of the band, correct?
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
yeah. And Shoot the Thrill, AC/DC. So, AC/DC, I'm going to end with this, and we'll get together and we'll do baseball again. Hopefully, the Orioles aren't in last place next time we get together and they're fixed somehow. AC/DC goes out on the road. And I saw him playing over in Europe, and I didn't even click on the videos because, like, I saw Axl. I know Brian had vocal problems or hearing problems. Which was
He
it?
had hearing problems. He
Hearing. I thought it was
lost his
hearing
hearing.
problems, right? And I thought the band was done and dead. And then I thought they're resurrecting them. And my wife always laughs. And I love Kiss. Paul Stanley, nobody's ever been kinder to me than Paul Stanley. I'd love to interview him again. I love Paul Stanley. My first love, Kiss Alive, right? But we saw him in Hershey a couple years ago. A lot of lip syncing, a lot of just like theatrical, not good theatrical, just sort of like, a performance, not a concert. And so at the end with it, I saw Guns N' Roses 2 summers ago at Hershey. We left. I felt sorry for him, the band. He was either tone deaf or has a monitor, or like it just was not any good at all. It was just really, after seeing the Pretenders be unbelievable, Warman, like I like what I like. I can sort of stomach sort of fake Foreigner and fake bands to some degree if singers are gone or can't do it anymore. I'm not mad at Journey for having different singers, or Styx for having, I'm not that guy, but when I go, I it better be good. Just make it good.
Right.
Whatever it is, make it enjoyable, make it good. Don't make me cringe. And if you can't do it anymore, I'm not here for an old timers game. And that goes for Engelbert Humperdinck, who I almost saw, who was 90 years old, who still can do it a little bit. Barry Manilow's running around and can apparently still do it. Tom Jones, I almost went and saw him in Vegas. There are some acts I want to see if they can still do it. So
Right.
Rod Stewart can still do it. Blew me away last summer how good he was. Really entertaining, excellent band, the whole thing. W worthwhile. Even if not as good as ever, worthwhile, right? AC/DC was, I thought I was done. I didn't think I was going to go. My buddy JT the Brick, I'm sure you know JT the
Yeah, oh
Brick,
yeah.
but hit me in Vegas in the middle of the night, sent me like a video. He's like, dude, you got to go see AC/DC. They're unbelievable. And I'm like, I love you, Brick. He's been wrong before about things. So I'm like, yeah, sorry. Like, and then they went to like Minneapolis or someplace a couple days later. And one of my buddies up there is like, dude, saw AC/DC. It was incendiary. You got to go. And I'm like, all right. And I remembered looking, and tickets in Pittsburgh were really cheap. And I talked to my wife. I'm like, you want to go to Pittsburgh? See AC/DC, maybe? And they were in DC. And I'm like, we kind of hate the DC thing. And it was really expensive in DC at the moment. And Pittsburgh was 55 degrees. And I'm like, I'm not driving to Pittsburgh and wearing a winter coat. And Dave Matthews is here the other day. It was 51 degrees. I'm like, I'm not doing that. The night of AC/DC, it was like, voila, 78 degrees, a little threat of rain, but whatever. Tickets were like, I paid $20 to see AC/DC. So like, and
You're
I paid
kidding.
$40 to park. We went down there, my wife and I, and from the minute we started, we cranked up Highway to Hell in the car going down. Girls Got Rhythm, Touched Too Much, like the whole deal. By the
Yeah.
time we got down there, we were pretty cranked up, and we went in, and it was legendarily great. It was just like from the like I was texting my rock and roll buddy John Allen from Stone Horses and Esther, and he actually wrote the song 1985, Shake Your Ass on the Hood of Whitesnake's Car. And I'm like, dude, they're great. Maury, they were great. AC/DC was great. It was, I saw them on, Back in Black. I mean, like
Right.
literally, it was great.
I didn't go, mostly because it was cost prohibitive for me, but I've seen them a bunch. I mean, a bunch, a bunch. I first time was 78, with Bon. And then I saw them pretty much every tour after that, and they're always great. I couldn't get down with Axl Rose filling in. I know why they did, right? I know they tried it. I know there was some talk about it. But every clip that I saw, and I watched a live stream of the first show that they came back with, and I was like, okay, you're tuned down a full step. I get it. Your vocal range isn't as what it used to be to play to pitch like you did on the albums. It still sounded great. And so, I mean, but this is it. It's gotta be. There's
That's
no
what I
way.
thought. I almost went to Cleveland the other night, Mari. I swear, I had buddies in Cleveland, Munch and Bernardo, and I hit John to say maybe you want to get the car and go out, because I thought, man, it's a little bit like seeing a good player at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like that was really good. Like we walked out of Landover that night really satiated, really like, wow, that was great.
Yeah, the set list was really good. I think it's great. I mean, it's got a lot, some newer stuff, right? but it's pretty long. And I mean, I think that's the thing that's most surprising. I thought they would mail it in, they'd do an hour at most,
Like
right?
Aerosmith was doing that at the end, right?
Yeah.
Just play, yeah.
But I think that the core thing for them, and what's really smart, is they're doing very limited dates, right? They're just doing a handful, and it's all stadium stuff. That gives Brian time to go ahead and bounce back. And then I don't know what they did with this hearing. I know that he had something special done. I haven't seen any pictures. I gotta assume he's doing in-ears by now, because it would just be impossible to just crank wedges at this stage. And the stages are so big, you just can't do floor wedges anymore. So, yeah, I mean, it's weird to look at Angus all gray. I remember when Jimmy Page finally said, "I'm no longer going to color my hair," and went all white. I mean, you just look at him, you go, "Man, dude's old, but he's still Angus Young. He's still really great. He's never going to move 1978, 1980 Angus." I mean, to see that was the most frenetic thing I've ever seen in my life. And like, it's really hard. Because in my band, it's like my guitar player's my age, which is, we're not young, we're in our 60s. So it's like, dude, you got to keep moving. And he does, but it's like, to try and get to that level, it's not. So I think the thing that's interesting, I just picked up, we picked up a couple new songs, and I picked up Big Gun, right? Which is kind of off one soundtrack thing. And doggone it, Malcolm's doing this weird stuff, like where you would traditionally do this thing over here, which I won't get into the semantics of it, but he just adds this little thing in there that you're like, what's he doing that's different there? That should just be a straight A, like he's done on power A chord through this thing here. He's doing something different there, where he's layering something over the top. And that's the thing that I always find, that you could take a formula that has gone on for 50 years, like they never changed, and yet it always seems to work, because they just are so good at what they do. It's like, why change it? I mean, I'm glad to see they're going out this way. It's not like Rush, where they went out on this super high note with Clockwork Angels, right? Which was kind of a high watermark. The last studio albums haven't been fantastic. There are a couple of good tracks in each one, but yeah, this is a good way for them to go out. I mean, get the tour out of the way and call it. You're glad. I'm glad you get to see it. Like I said, I'm not going to go. It was just cost prohibitive for me out here on the West Coast. It's super spendy. So,
It was just
but
great. I mean, I'm just and I you could not have told me the last time we chatted that I would go. I'd be like, nah, probably. I saw them many times.
yeah.
The last time I saw them, I looked it up, is 1991. Money Talks at the
Yeah.
Capitol Center. I caught the Angus dollar bills. I had it in my billfold, and I look back and like flick of the switch and those kinds of that era there. Let's Get It Up and it just yeah that. I like AC/DC more than I think I do, and I think that that really came through for me. And my wife really likes AD like AC/DC. We just really had a good time. It was a great night, and I don't always feel that way about concerts. But I thought of you, Mari Brown, and your band Shoot the Thrill. Mari Brown shoots the thrill in two rock and roll bands, one with the Scorpions and AC/DC. But more than that, he is the Forbes baseball guy as well as the business of baseball. Next time we get together, just the business of baseball, just streaming and all the issues and where the money's coming from. I would just leave you with this, and I've told this story a couple times this week, but here in Baltimore, we've had this trauma and the new owner and stuff. A buddy of mine gave them some money on that Birdland. It's the account where you just give them money and you get the discounts and all that. He didn't even want to use the money on his account because they're in last place and it's June. They ain't getting his money again. And that's really when we talk about we go back to the baseball thing, that's the part that frightens me for all of this when I see them playing in Sacramento with the A's in a minor league stadium in Tampa. It's sort of like, where is this going? Where's the next big idea? And that's the part that concerns me for baseball as you cover it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, attendance looks like it's going to be up again. So I think some changes, obviously rule changes, make the game a little bit snappier. But the thing that's the most concerning, and this is Look, I don't even want to. We could do a whole segment on why I don't think a salary cap fixes it. I think the bad thing, Nestor, is we are going to see a work stoppage at the end of 2026 into 2027. And I don't see how we don't see some games lost. I think the owners are going to go after a salary cap.
The end
And
of next year, correct?
yeah,
Okay.
the CBA ends at the beginning of December of 2026. They from now on, every time a labor deal is done, you will see an off-season lockout. It's just going to be like clockwork. They don't want to strike. They don't want to put the power in the hands of the players later on. That's how we lost the World Series in the 90s. So you will see that time and time again because they use it as leverage. And it's just a bad place to be right now. I think that everybody realizes it's going to happen again, like we did last time. Last time we had a week. They compressed the season. They got 162 in with one less week of calendar. I don't see how they don't lose regular season games this time around. I don't know how far they go. Once you get into June, you're starting to talk about owners leaving money on the table at that point with summer and the kids. But April, March, May, maybe.
Oh
Maybe.
man, we got enough problems around here without them
We
not
do.
playing. Mari Brown is here. I'm much more optimistic about rock and roll saving me than the Baltimore Orioles. I certainly felt
Always.
that way with Mike Peters' funeral last week from the Alarm. My buddy,
Yeah.
it just sort of moved my rock and roll soul in a different direction here, sir. Hey man, take care of yourself. We'll always have AC/DC together. I'm gonna get out to your hair fest one of these days and just party down with all those cover bands out there. I am Nestor, we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.